Welcome to the Watchers of the Skies program. I'm Carlos Campo, president here at Ashland University, joined by my friend and colleague, Dennis Bonacruces. Dennis, what a great day.
It is.
You know,
typical Ohio weather. Gotta love it.
Well, that is true. Yeah. Do you remember seeing in a Western this familiar scene? I'm sure you have, where someone comes into a new town and they're told by someone, generally the sheriff, gentlemen, put your weapons here on the table. In this town, we don't let you carry when you go into a saloon or any other place. Have you seen that in a scene in a Western before? You got to turn in your guns.
I have, although it usually doesn't turn out so well.
Yeah, it doesn't turn out so well. Well, now we're taking on an exciting topic. I know all of our students here in the studio are excited. Same kind of thing. When students get to campus, they'll have to turn in their smartphones. What do you think? Got to lay them down.
Do they give them any drugs to deal with the DTs that they're going to suffer?
Well, we're going to talk about that in a moment. I guess we should have a proviso. That was a joke. That's not happening. And so Michaela, who's running the show, is now catching her breath, as is Matt, Eli, Bryn, and Ireland, all the talented students here in the studio. There are college campuses. I know there are at least one or two private schools that is a requirement. You cannot even take them. You can take them into your classroom, but they've got to be off. Mm-hmm. Others have said you can't take them in. Some are calling for flip phones only. And our good friend, we have not met Jonathan Haidt. Have you met Jonathan Haidt?
I have not.
Well, we respect his work. Mm-hmm. You know, he wrote a book called The Coddling of the American Mind. Does that sound right? And co-wrote that book. But, you know, one of the things we like about his work, he's a thorough researcher. Mm-hmm. And we were just reading from one of his articles that indicated that he started some research on what is the impact of these devices, these smartphone devices, and particularly social media on these devices, on the mental health of young people. He started to catalog it, started to do the research and aggregate it, and now he's come out very publicly with a new book. Mm-hmm. What's the new book? What's he advocating for? And what are the possible implications here?
Right. So the new book, and for some reason the title escapes me, is The Anxious Mind or Anxious Childhood?
Anxious Generation.
The Anxious Generation, right? Yes. So in this book, he, again, is very much, it's not that he's anti-tech, but rather that he thinks that up to a certain age, well, there are two things that he thinks have gone wrong with childhood. And really, he kind of noticed this big dip in mental health. Mm-hmm. Around 2009, it just gets worse and worse and worse. And what is he correlated with? Well, the smartphone and then the rise of social media sites. And that's the second part. The first part he actually discussed in the earlier books, which is this kind of lack of play. So when you and I were kids, I mean, there wasn't much to do because, you know, the car hadn't even been invented at that point. But
what do you mean there wasn't much to do?
Yeah, there wasn't much to do. No, but I mean, it was much more freedom to play, explore. I mean, like a lot of people that I've talked to around my age, we all agree. Basically, our parents said, okay, come back when the streetlights come on. Mm-hmm. And other than that, you know, go knock yourself out.
Have fun.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I remember as a kid, you know, I'd just, you know, go to the local park. I'd run around. I'd walk to my friend's house like a mile away, walk
Never
back.
Never thought twice about it.
Yeah, no problems at all. You know, a hitchhike with people who looked strange. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I didn't do that.
But in general, I mean, it was more or less, you know, you teach the kid, you know, these are things to be careful about. And once you've done that, you know, call me if something happens. But basically, you know, let me know where you are in general. But other than that, just go have fun. And that has changed radically, even though, as he points out, the outside world has become a safer place since around the 80s or 90s. But
there's a greater chance that your child will be struck by lightning than they would be kidnapped or in some way bothered by a stranger.
Right. And I mean, he doesn't mention this, but I mean, something that I think we've probably mentioned this to each other at some point. So, for instance, we all have heard these horrible stories about kids trick-or-treating in their razor blades and apples. Never happened. Yeah. So, I mean, all of these horror stories just didn't happen. The vast majority of abductions are by family members. They're not by random strangers.
Right. But ask the average parent.
Right.
And
exactly.
These are all
stranger
true.
Danger. Yeah. So, again, it's not that you shouldn't have no common sense, but that all these stories are just grossly overblown. So part of it is that there's been this real lack of play, which is one of the things that he, again, addresses in the book and in these articles. He says that, you know, just we as mammals in general, that play is essential to our development as human beings. And so the lack of this, which is exacerbated by smartphone use. So And it's not just, again, that they're smartphones. So and it's not that he's against the idea of any phone. So as you point out, flip phones are okay, right, as a way of organizing with your parents, with your friends, that you're going to do X and you'll be at such and such a place at such and such a time. That's okay. But that what phones do is they create these networks where everyone is on them, and so you feel obligated to spend a bunch of time on them, and they become devices for depersonalizing your life.
Right.
Right. So there's much less play, much less time spent with peers. You get stuck in this world, and you have to spend not only that, it's not only that you're in these activities, but you're also, you have to, in effect, curate your digital life.
Sure.
So there's more time spent on that. So all this time spent on that takes you away from play, takes you away from friends, from interacting with other human beings. And it's not that he thinks that these devices should be tossed, but that at a certain stage of let's say, psychosocial development and brain development and so on, below that age, I mean, you're being formed and you're being misformed, malformed, mm-hmm. by the time you're spending on these devices rather than with your peers and in play and so on.
Right, and the date I see him put out more than any is 16, right? And
right.
So he does believe this is one area where legislature should probably intervene and indicate there'll be a full ban on social media sites for, you know, all kids under 16. Right. He does point out that the research indicates that the deleterious effects are much more serious for women.
For girls, yeah.
Right.
Right.
For
so girls, like 11 to 13 especially.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's really problematic. And I'm quoting from one of the articles, quoting Haidt here, and he says, I call smartphones experience blockers, exactly what
right.
you were saying, Dennis, because once you give the phone to a child, it's going to take up every moment that is not nailed down to something else. And I will say in the lives of my grandkids, that is certainly true. These devices have this extraordinary pull. And as our listeners know, and you know well, Dennis, these are incredible scientists who've worked on making these magnets for not just young people, but anyone, but certainly the idea that they do take away from experience. We may have talked about this on another episode, but there are parents now that have their kids wear lanyards, and on these lanyards they literally have a message to anyone who would be concerned, that is, this is my name, this is my parent, they have given me permission to walk to school, to walk to the park, you know, that kind of thing. It sounds absurd, but that's what they've done to ensure that, well, you know, these cases exist where someone will call and say,
right.
this child is, you know, just wandering around the neighborhood because it's so unusual to see. And at least one parent, they had their child taken away from by protective services, who said that they were not effectively supervising the
unfit
child.
Parents, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So it's clear, and you've pointed out quite nicely the way Haidt, this coddling that was part of his last book, is part of the message here. But it was in 2019 that he really started looking into this and has looked at the research, and it feels overwhelming from what he's put out.
Right, and yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there are some people who have objected and said, well, you know, there are other things that are going on, like these broad societal trends, like there was the Great Recession,
yes,
and there's financial inequality, but he's responded to all of these, and it does seem like a pretty strong case. So you always have to be careful about monocausal explanations, where you just throw everything in one basket and say, well, this caused it, but it's at least a pretty plausible case, both in terms of the data and in terms of, I would say, kind of anecdotal sort of felt experience.
Sure. I mean, if we're looking at rates of mood disorders, and I'm reading from a specific reference here, the number of kids reporting depression and anxiety has risen steadily since the early 2010s, until rates were up 134% and 106%, so for depression and anxiety, by 2020. I mean, those are rather startling. And again,
right.
is it a causal issue? You know, these are things that others would dig into. We try to present a balanced view on the show here, Dennis. On the flip side of this, you know, there are some folks, I was reading from reason.com, you may know that publication.
Yeah, it's a libertarian website.
It's a libertarian website. So where would they fall on this? I think you can already guess, even if you haven't read. But they're very concerned with any issues that where the government would become involved, take away freedom, and this kind of thing. And in their article, they did a rather lengthy review of Haidt's research, and they indicated that there are some questions to be asked about how conclusive the evidence is, or maybe some gaps in the research here. And of course, from their perspective, and the perspective I'm sure of many of our listeners, well, let's wait a minute, Carlos. Can't we leave this up to parents to decide? Do we really want an Ohio State ban on social media sites and on smartphones for all people under 16?
Right. Well, we should clarify. So yes, he makes four different recommendations, yeah, and only one of them involves government intervention.
True.
Right. So the government intervention would be for social media sites to basically prove, right, so he thinks under 16 they shouldn't be able to be on,
right,
and that you need to have much more stringent measures. So already it's, I forget what the age is. Is it 11? The current law?
Yes, I believe, yeah, 11 is right.
Yeah, but it's very easily skirted.
Sure.
So they want to have more enforcement. And so I didn't see the recent piece, but Tyler Cowen did a podcast with Jonathan Haidt, and he kind of, you know, went at the same point, which was to say, well, you know, so what happens when social media sites, you know, so someone gets around it? I mean, will Facebook get sued out of existence by parents who say, oh, my kid got on and this happened, and they file a class action suit? And, you know, do they get destroyed? I mean, you know, how is this going to work in practice? And there was a back and forth on that. I mean, I think readers, or I should say listeners and viewers might want to check that out. It was a very interesting and kind of contentious interview. But from what I understand from reading some commentary on that, that Facebook and other sites don't have to have 100% success ratio. So if it's like even 95% would be incredible. So Cowen thought that would be, you know, if you have 5% of a, you know, a company as huge as Facebook, I mean, that's still a huge number.
Yeah.
That if they were in a class action suit, but no, in fact, 95% would show that the company had really been engaged in a good faith action to make these boundaries. But anyway, so that's the only one that's that would require legal sanction. The other ones are ones that can be done by schools, right? So banning smartphones at school. So they can either have to leave them at home or they can put them in a locker. So that's one thing. Don't give your kids smartphones. That's up to you know, parents. That's not,
sure,
doesn't that's require not any government intervention at all.
Right.
Right. So, you know, no phones at school, no smartphones until they're 16. And then just have them play more, right? I mean, have them actually engaged in interpersonal interaction without the ubiquitous phone and tablet and all the rest of it present.
Well, let's draw it into our personal lives, which you do every once in a while. What is your personal use of smartphone and these kinds of sites? Let's hear from you directly.
Yeah, social media, basically never.
Really?
I use Facebook because I have relatives in Greece.
Okay.
And there's a couple of philosophy groups that I'm in.
Okay.
And that's it. Okay. I don't use Facebook other than that.
Because you're a blogger. I mean, you have a very,
right,
very successful chess website.
Mm-hmm.
But other than...
Yeah, just so I'm not on Twitter or Instagram or whatever else there is out there. I'm not on it. So, yeah, I mean, I have a smartphone. I mean, I use it, but I'm using it to read, basically. I mean, not, and of course, as a phone and texting people, but
sure,
but not for social media purposes.
And in your use for these other purposes, do you find that you feel like you're on it too much just in general? Have you taken an intentional almost period away from it where you almost fast from,
well,
using your phone?
It's funny. Once this show is sunsetted,
yes,
there are a bunch of political websites that I will be,
okay,
divesting myself of. I mean, not that I'm going to lose all interest in politics, but I've been on an overly heavy diet for my taste. And I think it's important. I mean, I think what we're doing is valuable, but it's sort of like we're doing the dirty work, so maybe our watchers can do a little bit less of,
sure,
that, or at least we're pointing them in useful directions, I hope. So I think, yeah, I think even for that, which is interesting and of value, even that I find in some ways kind of repugnant, mm-hmm, to dive into the sewer and see how the sausage is being made politically and in social issues. So even that I find, mm-hmm, kind of an unpleasant, you know, thing to spend too much time on. So, I mean, it's important to know about, but...
Right. Yeah. Is it really worth your time?
Right.
To
I don't
extent?
Think it's especially healthy to dig too deeply into that world and stay in it too long.
I understand.
So, how about you?
You know, I think for me, especially as president, there was a time that I felt a responsibility to be much more involved in social media. I would use it for announcements or to highlight something that was going on campus. But before long, Dennis, I realized that there was a trap there because it led to an expectation. The idea being, well, if the president's commenting and using social media to highlight an athletic event, well, what about what's happening in the Middle East? Or, you know, what about a contemporary issue regarding X, Y, or Z? And what I found is that there is such a drive for an immediate response. Mm-hmm. I have generally a tendency that says, and maybe it's something I read long ago, and it was, you know, the idea is you never put off for tomorrow something you can do today, right? So mm-hmm. this is a proverb. Well, actually, what I would suggest is the very opposite is true. Always put off until tomorrow anything that you can that is not something that is insistent that must happen today. And to me, that philosophy has won out in my own life. Well, just try to do that with social media. Right. Because as you know, I have all kinds of constituencies who are pushing me not only to say something specific, but to say it quickly, right? Why hasn't the president spoken out on X issues? And so what I've found is because my temperament is such that I actually want to take time with things, and what I will often find is that my initial response to something isn't well informed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm really going to go back quite a bit, but I'll pull in, and I don't think we've ever dropped my first cousin George Clooney's name on this show, so we'll take it on the last show. But my cousin George, for instance, came out very strongly in opposition of the paparazzi, who he thought were the cause of Princess Diana's death. Mm-hmm. Now, I love my cousin, and he was doing it because he cared for her. He actually knew her, and he, of course, hates the paparazzi for other reasons.
This is like a double, you know, bit of name dropping.
Yeah, I guess it is. But I guess my point in all of that is to say that George was wrong on that issue. You know, that what the science has said is far more complex.
Right, because that's what the story I've heard as well, that, yeah, they were trying to get away from the paparazzi.
There you go. And they were almost driven to death. You know, well, that wasn't what occurred fully. I mean, certainly the paparazzi were chasing, but the conditions were such that the person was speeding. The person obviously had not only alcohol in his system, but also drugs in his system as well. And even Mercedes-Benz went so far as to say that the only person who survived the accident had a supplemental restraint device system, you know, basically a seatbelt, and
right.
Princess Diana did not. I guess my point is that's just one example of so many things, Dennis, that we both know that if you're given time to understand the fullness of the issue, and sometimes it's much more complex, that you would respond very differently. And I have enough regrets in my life that I don't want to be able to look back and say, gosh, so here's my first blush response, but I was completely misinformed or ill-informed. So for me, I've stepped back intentionally and significantly. I don't have an Instagram account. And I guess we should say that was the one that Height really pointed to. He thought Instagram was far worse than any other single social media site.
I mean, I think to some extent we changed the subject by discussing what we would use social media for. Right. So the issue is, you know, what are these young people using it for? And there, so much of it is, let's say, curating an image.
Right.
Right. You know, especially for young girls. I mean, how much is looks based?
Right.
And, you know, we just finished talking about the transgender issue. Right. How much, you know, nervousness, how much tension, how much angst is caused by, you know, by kids worrying about how they look compared to their peers and,
oh my goodness,
and things of this sort. So, yeah, I mean, for let's say adults, I mean, it might be a time suck and it might be, you know, might be bad in other ways. But for them, it's not just the time suck, but it's, again, what it does to their mental health as well. So,
yeah, no question. It is an age base issue, and I don't know that the research that Height references here really has much to do with adults per se.
Right.
Although, you know, in another show, perhaps at another time, we would take that up as a potential topic. I do feel like this is, again, one of those things, Dennis, where you consider what's the impact and how much time have we had to really understand what the impact is of these devices in our lives. But these are questions that will remain.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's an excellent point, and it ties into the last show we did on puberty blockers, right? So again, it's this rush to do something, to embrace a technology.
Yes.
Different kinds of technologies, but still this rush to embrace a technology before we really
understand
we really know
fully the consequences. One of the things, as we close, we want you to rush to embrace is Ashland University, our mission and our campus. Come visit us sometimes. Keep writing to us at president@ashland.edu and keep listening here on the Watchers of the Skies program. We'll see you next time.